Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Roll the Roof podcast. My name is Raj Baines, which means that Jack's not here if I'm talking first. Seb, you are here though. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Raj. I am here.
You sound a bit distant. Have you dropped something?
No, I just put my microphone down briefly, but I've picked it up again. My body is here. My spirit is still somewhere outside Wembley, I think.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of the way out. Was it like a 3-hour wait or something like that?
No, it was. I mean, we from seat to tube station, it took about an hour. I mean, it actually looked a lot worse than it eventually was, but it was it's pretty frustrating because obviously it was pretty hot in London last night, and there was an elderly guy who collapsed in the tube station. It was so warm.
You talk about yourself there, Seb.
Yeah, no, I made it through, but another elderly gentleman passed out, I think.
You can't say things like that and not expect just a...
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. As I say, mate, like, my body's here and my spirit isn't, yeah. So I'm not quite as, you know...
Take it light on you.
It's a funny one. We were talking to the people around us on the way out, and the travel problem is exaggerated, because, of course, ordinarily at Wembley, you have... It's usually a kind of half and half situation, and some supporters are held back, and you know you usually have about 40,000 going for the tube at the same time. But last night there was no obvious segregation because there are only about sort of 10 Monaco fans, it was a little claustrophobic at times. But we got out eventually. Once you get to the tube station, it's fine. It's a little frustrating.
Excellent. I'm always happy to start with sort of like a town planning section.
Why not?
The podcast. Yeah. It goes nicely hand in hand with the occasional train station section that we do.
We do like that section. Yeah.
The banal side of our podcast. Just anything.
I tell you, mate. On that note, I was at Birmingham New Street the other day. That is a train station. It's like
it's just a shame that you've got to go into Birmingham afterwards, isn't it?
Well, no, I didn't know. I was passing. I was getting a connection from it, but there's. It's like an airport. It's incredible.
Yeah, I've heard they've had new work there. Birmingham's one of them odd cities where there's odd nice bits, but the rest of it's horrible. Like I've driven through it a few times just to get to places. Like if you diverted off the motorway, and it's because it's so old, it doesn't look very appealing. But there are some places like, you know, as you say, it's train station and what's the shopping centre called? Bullring.
Possibly. Yeah. I didn't go outside the train station, but,
you make it sound like you're,
I wasn't sort of, you know, against the idea of stepping into Birmingham, but,
you make yourself sound like Tom Hanks in that, film.
Where he's stuck. Yeah. Yeah. I was coming back from Everton actually. And I got there and there were, it's a weird thing because it's a really nice station. It's really sort of polished and neat and it's, you know, it's very contemporary. And then because it was the opening day of the season, there were football fans quite literally passed out in their own sick on the platforms. There's one guy who'd just given up and had just slumped in a corner by himself. And, hopefully he was okay. I don't know. He looked a bit worse, whereby I just wanted to step over him at the time. But yeah.
There's only once I've ever been, I don't think I was even drunk. I just had I'm not sure if I've ever discussed this on the pod or not. I think I've told Jack. I'm not sure if I've ever told you, but once when I was at a Leeds festival when I was maybe 17 or 18, I was around then. It was like a day or two in, and I'd gone to the cash machine, I think, but I'd gone on my own. And just as I'd got my cash out, I just sort of sat down on the foot of the cash machine, just had this like mini crisis on my own. I don't know how long I was there for, like 15, 20 minutes maybe, where I just sort of sat there and sort of this sudden wave of misery washed over me. Like, and one of my mates had to come and rescue me just like out of nowhere. He's like, what are you still doing here? You like, it's been like 20 minutes since you left. Why you sat down? You all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. It like took me 5 minutes to like get my wits back about me, but it was just weird sort of like the first time I'd been alone for like 2 days and like not drinking or and just doing something like a normal day-to-day task sort of.
And you broke down.
Yeah,
basically.
It was a bit of a breakdown.
Short circuit.
Yeah, it really was. It was just a really strange... It's never happened to me before or since, but I always remember that happening because it was just one of those where I sort of... It wasn't as if I'd had too much drink or, you know, anything else. It was just a random thing where the situation sort of got on top of me a little bit and I needed one of the pals to come and literally pick me up and keep me going.
That's quite a task because you're not a small person.
No. Well, I think it was Lucas who's the one mate I've got who's taller than me, so it's not too bad.
Jesus, how tall is Lucas? 8 foot?
6 foot 8, I think.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah. We're always the two, if you ever go out with us, where, you know, you get the short lads with Napoleon syndrome who've done nothing but chest work in the gym, who try and, you know, have a scrap because they need to prove something to themselves, and we sort of just look down our noses at them, literally. It's like, it's not worth it, pal. Just, you know, leave us be. But anyway.
Yeah, land of giants.
Yeah, less of that. If we start with Stoke, start with the nice stuff. There's nothing before Stoke we need to cover, is there?
We did previewed that.
Yeah, you had a nice preview with the chap from the thing. The chap from
We did do that. Yeah.
Mark Holmes, is it?
Yeah. Mark was great.
Yeah, I missed this game. I've watched the extended highlights since, but I didn't get to watch it live as I usually do because it kicks off the same time as the West Yorkshire derby between Huddersfield and Leeds, which I was in attendance of. So do you wanna take the lead, mate? How did you find the 90 minutes?
Well, the thing is, when I watched it, I thought... We played really well. But when I watched it live, I thought we played better than we really had. Because I think in retrospect, Stoke were awful. I mean, they started the game pretty well and they had a couple of chances, and they actually started the second half pretty well. But I was amazed at. That game last season, it sort of came with caveats because Stoke were obviously knackered and quite a few of their players had clearly checked out for the season by the time we got there.
They had nothing to play for.
They had nothing to play for, so I think a lot of us thought, you know, great result, and we were all swept up in our sort of title charge thing anyway. But I think it was as much about them as it was about us. I mean, there were some really good performances. I mean, Eriksen was fantastic. I thought Son had a good game, not quite as good a game as people think he did, but he did play well and took his goal brilliantly. His second goal brilliantly. And so there's a lot of positives, and I think actually. Regardless of what Stoke were, it was exactly what we needed because, you know, we're domestically we're unbeaten, but we haven't necessarily played that well this year. And it was the kind of performance that I think, I don't know, it was there's a little bit of symmetry there because Stoke last season was the last time that we played really well. So to go there again and to replicate that performance, I actually thought last season's effort was better. I thought that we were more impressive. I thought the sort of the intensity of our play was remarkable that night. Didn't get that so much on the weekend, but you know, 4-0, you know, Stoke a good team. I know they're bottom of the league and they haven't won yet, but they will become a good team. So maybe just count our blessings and be happy that we played them then and caught them on an off day. But there seems to be something wrong with them. There's I don't know. It's not necessarily tactical. It's not necessarily, you know, personnel related. It's just I don't know. There's something not very Mark Hughes about that team at the moment. And if I was feeling conspiratorial, I'd say that there's a little bit of a dressing room disconnect somewhere. Because there were weird things that happened, sort of, you know, odd defensive lapses that, okay, happen in football, but don't usually happen in early September, you know, when players are supposed to be fresh. And we brush them aside so easily odd, very odd.
Is it not one of those cases where they're one of those teams that are sort of... in between a rock and a hard place where they're far too good to be relegated if they play well. But even when they play well, they're not good enough to sort of bridge the gap to the top four or even the top six. They're sort of lower Europa League spot is their glass ceiling at present.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably right. I thought that prior to them signing a proper forward, but now that they've done that, I think they're a very useful side in theory. I mean, I think Wilfred Bony is. I know what happened to Man City, and I know he was shit, but he's a brilliant player, and he's exactly what the sort of the Bojans and the Arnautovics and the Shaqiris need. They're sort of a little focal point to orbit around. So I think you're probably right. I don't think they can ever at the moment they're sort of realistically better than a Europa League spot. But you know, just very funny. I just gave me a very funny feeling. It felt like a sort of not a false result because we deserved our points and we scored some brilliant goals. But it felt like a little bit of a it felt like it occurred in a strange context. Put it that way.
I mean. For what it was, you can't really complain about a 4-0 win away
from home.
Or even the fact that, you know, we may not have even had to get in top gear to get to four. It was sort of...
We should mention Kyle Walker, sorry, because he was... I think other than Eriksen, he was our best player. I think he was
Kyle
terrific.
Walker's been exceptional for some time now. I genuinely can't remember the last time he had a bad game.
No, I mean... No, if you discount sort of the last few games of last season when all of our players are a little
bit off.
I think
that's an anomaly. I think the last few games of last season was sort of its own thing. It was a feeling around the club and the disappointment and whatnot was sort of...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Irreplicable. It bled into the performances as well, quite clearly.
And, of course it did.
Sorry, mate, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say that I'm sort of... I can't remember what I was going to say now. No, 4-0 away is not bad. We didn't have to get out of top gear to do it. And the fact that they were sort of, you know, there were players that looked more settled with what they were doing than they had done previously. Eriksen, who you've pointed out, did well. And the Dio Wanyama axis looked better than it had done. I mean, it still doesn't look like anything that you'd want to see for a long amount of time or something that we should hang our hats on too much. Because there are obviously better combinations there to be played. But it's nice to see that, you know, if worst comes to worst again or something, it's functional at the very least. And I think that's all I took out of it, really. There's not much you can really glean out of it. Once you know the result and you watch it sort of afterwards, and, you know, it's just extended highlights. It's no better than watching Match of the Day, really.
No, not really. I agree with that. I mean, it's one thing I'll say is that with that the Dio Wanyama thing is that I think this isn't aimed at either of those players. It's aimed at what they are as a combination in terms of okay, they give us a very solid base and they make a very rigid midfield together, but they're very limiting in terms of what we're able to do going forward, because it means neither is particularly comfortable in the final third. So it means essentially we always have to attack with just four players, you know, unless, you know, Janssen or, Sissoko is introduced. It kind of brings us to last night in that the difference in Tottenham when Moussa Dembélé is on the pitch. Even the difference in the crowd, like Dembélé, like there's something about it, not just sort of all the abilities we know he has. So like the, you know, his tendency to kind of to press up the field and to carry the ball between the lines and, you know, to move the ball between the lines. But like he's such a reliable outlet. He's a guy in sort of, I think this transcends sort of every level of the game. He's the guy in your school playground who you give the ball to and you know he's not going to lose it. He's like that, but at a professional level. And it's... We just look, I don't know, I it just seems as if him being at the base of the midfield, even if he's just sitting at the base of the midfield, seems to embolden everybody ahead of him, because there's just that extra layer of confidence in everybody else in what they're doing. And that's very interesting. I don't want that to be sort of mistranslated to a criticism of either Eric Dier or Victor Wanyama, because it's not meant that way. It's just that I think there's still... that's still very much a partnership in progress, and that they're still growing, learning to play together. And, you know, Wanyama and Dembélé will have to go through that too. But I think the difference is it's almost as if the uncertainty between them and the kind of the lack of balance there bleeds into the rest of the team. And yeah, it's just a great thing to have Dembele back. It's and that was really obvious last night.
Yeah. If we discuss sort of the atmosphere going into the game first.
Yeah.
Because after winning 4-0 away and selling out Wembley and all that sort of a business, there was a lot of excitement in the air. And you're quite rightly so. It's been a few years since we've been at the highest table in European football. Mm. When we had the trust on as well, they were you know, quite forthright in saying how much they wanted Wembley to feel like home. And all that sort of jazz.
It's to say there that they did a fantastic job. I mean, as far as Wembley can ever feel like home for a visiting team, it did last night. It was the effort that's gone in, not just in the things like putting our badge and putting our they put the team news on the screen that faces Wembley way, so we were all reading it as we were walking down. But I just think there's the little details inside the stadium. A lot of care has gone into making sure it feels like a Tottenham home game, and it's not just, you know, half-assed. Oh yeah, we'll just play your games in here now. Fuck off. It felt like a Tottenham home game, and yeah, that's greatly appreciated because it's there's a lot of thoughts gone into it. Is what I'm trying to say.
BT Sport were far more interested in the fact that Billy Joel had a concert there than the fact that, you know, Tottenham put all this effort into making it feel like home, which is slightly strange. You and Jack met up before the game, and you know, toddle down together and whatnot. What did you two make of it? Did you enjoy yourselves? How was the atmosphere? You
know, oh, wonderful!
Talking about the game, what was it? The experience of it like?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was. I've never been in a place with so many Tottenham fans. I mean, there were 85,000 of us there, and it was just, it was, I know the game was disappointing, but when I was coming home after the match, you know, I didn't really think of the result as much. I just thought it's just a really special occasion. I know something that's kind of unquantifiable in it as well, because it's very hard to describe why it felt special. But when you get out of the tube and you look down and everywhere, I mean, and I mean everywhere, like a sea of people, it's like a kind of, like a Glastonbury-like vista, you know, when you just see bodies and heads moving along and flags and Tottenham shirts.
I've never seen a Tottenham shirt at Glastonbury, mate. I've seen a few.
No. It's not very football, is it, Glastonbury? It was very powerful. Is probably how I describe it.
Have you ever been at Glastonbury?
No,
it's round your way though, isn't it? It's not too far from
yeah. Glass. It was my grandparents used to live really close to it, but in that part, no. But it's just never appealed to me, mate. I'm a sleep in my own bed kind of person.
Oh, I always take a duvet and some pillows, and that makes it feel much better. Than what else. But you're like, I thought you'd like it though. That's that Sunday afternoon slot where they bring out Dolly Parton or something. Be ready,
yeah,
and
Lionel Richie, yeah, yeah, mate, definitely. But well, you know, that aside, Wembley.
Change the subject
because you definitely change the subject. I
kid you not, I mean, though, that my favourite memory from ever going to Glastonbury, I've been twice, is in 2013 when I watched Kenny Rogers on the Sunday with the lads, and we had an ice cream and a beer, and it was brilliant because we were absolutely smashed from the day before and like overtired and whatnot. Similar sort of situation to what you are now. And Kenny Rogers came on and did Islands in the Stream twice, and it was one of the greatest things I've ever witnessed in my life.
Well, okay, again, Wembley.
How does Wembley compare to Kenny Rogers doing Islands in the Stream?
I can't possibly say, but the occasion felt enormous, man. It was Jack and I, when we got inside the stadium, and Charlotte was with us as well. That's Mrs. Jack, for those who don't know. It
was more the third wheel than you on this occasion.
Yeah, well, I did say to Jack, but Charlotte was I think, to be honest with you, like, Charlotte was better off without us. We were probably quite embarrassing. But it was very special to be inside there, and I've said subsequently on Twitter that there was quite a lot of moaning around us, and you know, quite a tedious level of early dissatisfaction. I mean, the guys behind us were complaining from like minute five onwards. But that being said, like the general feel of the stadium and the noise, and it wasn't like one of those occasions where you go there and the novelty of being at Wembley takes over. It felt like a much, much bigger version of White Hart Lane. It was loud, so loud, and that's great. There were long periods of silence, and the early goal knocked that enthusiasm away a little bit, but it was it was a great night.
Yeah. What did you and Jack got spotted, didn't you, on the tube up to the ground? Was it like a celebrity spotting? Did he ask for his picture and autograph?
No, mate. The first thing we heard of it was him tweeting the Ruler Roos account.
Like, oh, so somebody just like earwigged you?
Oh, I find it quite creepy. Like, just so sort of, why would you not come up and say hello? But I don't know. I, you know,
in the presence of you two celebrities, though, you'll have obviously been deep in conversation. Sometimes, you know, people don't want to seem rude and come up to you.
We weren't even talking about football on the train, though. I can't remember. We were just chatting. And we weren't even wearing our Rule the Roost t-shirts either. So
those don't exist. Those will never exist.
They do,
exist.
Right? So we've got like our name and numbers on the back of them, and big cockerel on the front.
Is this one of those things that you and Jack hide from me, like Pro Evolution Soccer? You've got mugs and stationery and everything. You're selling it for top dollar.
And we've actually both retired, mate, I'm afraid. I mean, you're slaving away, and I work under the guise of being a football writer. It's all bollocks, really. I don't. I just sit around six and a half days a week, record the podcast and the last. Yeah, yeah. That's why my Skype is occasionally a bit dodgy. You know.
Anyway, the match itself, sort of, we'll have two very different versions of this, because it's completely different watching it on television as it is to watching it in the stadium. If I go first, first 15 minutes were fantastic, I think. Sort of when you see the team sheet come through and he's got Dele Alli in midfield and he's starting Son, Lamela and Eriksen, and you've got those memories of beating the same side 4-1 last year at home, you sort of think, okay, he's seen what he's got and he's seen what he's up against, and he thinks he can essentially, you know, just overwhelm them. And for the first 15 minutes, that seemed like it would go to plan. Son had that one cleared off the line, and it only seemed to be sort of a matter of time before we scored. And I genuinely think, had we scored, had that sudden chance gone in, or had another one gone in that opening 15 minutes, it may well have been a procession. However, Monaco were fantastic on the break and we were very weak to stop them. Especially the first goal was sort of, Eric Lamela tried a pass that wasn't on. It appeared to be he was trying to meg the lad that he was trying to pass it through, or it could have just been a terrible pass, but you know, it fell to, you know, the most left-footed player on the park, and he sort of, you know, there's been a lot of people saying that Jan Vertonghen should have showed him onto his right foot, which he should have done, but it's easier said than done, especially when the lad's running at you at 20. Mate,
Bernardo Silva's a good player.
Yeah, especially when he's running at you at 20 mile per hour and he's turned you inside out. I'm not sure Vertonghen could have done much more than essentially doing what he tried to and trying to get into the way of it. And the finish was outstanding, because it's not as if he's just put it in the bottom corner. He's hit across it and he's done it at pace, so Hugo Lloris is getting nowhere near it whatsoever.
No blame attached to Lloris.
It's one of those techniques as well that he could quite easily get wrong and scuff it out for a throw in as well, because he's put that much, you know, reverse swaz on the ball going the opposite way that it's not easy to do. So that seemed to take the wind out of ourselves and give Monaco a little bit of belief, because what I think he was thinking with that lineup is, if we go ahead, Monaco are going to have to chase the game, because they'll want something out of it, and the more they chase, the more open they get, the more we're going to have a laugh with that many attacking players on the park. And if it turns into an arm wrestle, essentially going back and forth, then Pochettino has got every right to think that our 11 will overpower Monaco's. However, they scored a second on the break, and the match sort of took a turn for the worse from there, because they look rattled. Did Spurs, and it took them a few minutes to get back into themselves, and you know, they were visibly shaken, and sort of the crowd on television at least sounded as if they had like a sort of a 5 minutes to sort of ask themselves a few questions about what they were watching, which they've every right to do, I think, when you go 2-0 down that quickly inside half hour. And then the goal before halftime sort of again changed the complexion of it, because then you almost backed Spurs to go on and win it at that point. I think Jack even may have tweeted that it would have been 4-2. He promised it would have been 4-2 to Tottenham. But it didn't.
Well, especially Dele Alli had that chance from the Lamella ball just before half time.
Yes.
Where it sort of, it was just inches away from connecting.
Yes. And yeah, so there were sort of two really promising sections of Tottenham play in the first half, sandwiched either side of Monaco scoring two goals with their only two shots on target. And then the second half was much better, but sort of at that level, Monaco did well to repel us as best they could, and we just couldn't take a chance. Yeah. I mean,
they defended pretty well. I mean, I've read a lot of stuff since the game, like a lot of match reports and a lot of opinions and a lot of tweets. And my own take on it was, I know Jack and I were saying this at halftime, Monaco just a bit smarter than we were. And I think that the failing wasn't really in our inability to get back into the game, because, I mean, how often at that level, how often do you claw back a 2-0 advantage? I mean, teams up there are smart.
Yeah.
Teams up there can defend. Also, I think Jardim, the Monaco manager, said at the end of it that sort of the bigger pitch was a factor, and that's kind of been roundly dismissed by people. But actually, if you watch us, especially in the first half when we weren't quite as camped in their half, if you see how easily they were able to pass their way around our high press, that was quite interesting. I mean, it was sort of, I don't know what the dimensions are, but the Wembley pitch is pretty big. It's certainly bigger than White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like they had a little bit more space to exit. And we just never had that pressure. And sort of also, it's not like in the Premier League where you're pressing respectfully some fairly ordinary defenders, because fun as our football is, it's not defensively excellent. And sort of, you know, if you're pressing Curtis Davis, you might get a mistake. But these, you know, players, like seasoned Champions League or seasoned Europa League players, you know, they're technically good from the back. It's not the same as football, as British football, where bit of pressure, shit, foot through it into row Z, or, you know, straight down the throw of a centre half. It's not the same. I don't know. I don't think Monaco are a great team, but I was still impressed by what they did. And I think, you know, they got ahead of us. They took two goals. They were very economic, very precise. Fair play.
There's no reason to think from that performance that we couldn't do exactly the same to them away, especially
with the four
blokes that turn up to watch them as well. It's hardly like it's an imposing place to go.
I have no doubt that we will still qualify. I think that, well, with the caveat that as long as we learn a little bit about, I don't think we'll see Pochettino be that bold. Also, importantly, I think the only reason Dembele didn't start is because he hasn't for such a long time. Yeah. I think if Moussa Dembele starts that game, we win it.
Yeah, I mean, I've learned to take your big dick out opinions with a pinch of salt over the past couple of seasons.
Because, we're going to talk about Son now.
No, not Son. I mean, we're going to win the league and all sorts of that sort of a business that you've been known to profess in the past.
Okay.
Has come back to bite us in the arse. So usually that's a bad sign as far as I'm concerned. The more confident you are, the more concerned I am.
Okay, well, I'll turn it down. I'll turn it down then for your benefit. I don't.
This podcast is for my benefit, so...
There you go. Yeah, okay. Well, ours, because we make such a big killing off it away from you, remember?
Yeah.
I don't feel we're less likely to qualify. I mean, my expectation isn't any less.
Yeah,
really,
Leverkusen blew 2-0 lead against CSKA, so...
Yeah. These are vulnerable teams. It's not like we've lost. If there was a couple of Real, if we got the group most were expecting us to get, like a sort of a Real Madrid and a Paris Saint Germain and a couple of Barcelonas, then yeah, we'd be pretty fucked. But it's not a strong group, and I have no, I completely have faith in our ability to go there and beat them. Yeah,
I want to flip one of the points you made. Because you said that Monaco was smart, which they were, and the word that I used more than once to describe how we approached the game was naive, because it was Pochettino's first game in the Champions League, and, you know, I went to some length about what I think the intention was putting that team out, but mm-hmm. at the same time, I think that was our undoing as well, because it was odd to see us go to somewhere like Stoke and almost give them the respect of playing Dier and Wanyama and having a more solid base and having an extra defensively minded player next to Dier and somebody who's sort of got the natural instincts and has the nuances in their game to be able to read the game as a defensive component. And as good as Dele Alli is and as theoretic as well as you would do, sorry, in theory, in that position, sort of arriving into the box later and, you know, his energy and enthusiasm making up for any lapse in his defence, and he'll, you know, chase anyone around all day. I just think there was areas in which that if we had started Wanyama or Dembele, we would have been better off for. And as you said, if Dembele had started that game, we would have probably won it. And I think it was maybe just some, you know, exuberance or enthusiasm for the occasion.
Yeah, a bit of adrenaline, perhaps. I mean,
because it's not a very Pochettino decision to sort of, you know, go out with
very
the intention
bold.
to kill a team. He sort of, he's always slightly more cautious than that. And this is obviously with your 2020 hindsight goggles on, because before the game, you know, as much as anyone, I looked at the team and sort of went, oh, this is wonderful. He's going in with the intention, and that's why it's not. That's why I'm not sort of blaming him for defeat or anything like that, because while it might have been a naive decision, the intention was right and the purpose behind it was what you'd want him to have. I think you'd be far more worried if in his first Champions League game we threw out the way in which we played going forwards and we played sort of Wanyama, Dier and Dembele and sort of doubled down defensively or something like that.
So the fact that he
lent into a little bit of overconfidence rather than completely reverting and going into his shell was it was a mistake on the night, and you can say that having watched
the game. Do you really think that? I mean, I disagree.
Watching the game on television, yeah, I genuinely think that there was a flimsiness to us that wasn't there. I mean, you brought up the fact that they were able to pass around the high press, but at the same time, we had so much extra room on the flanks that in those two spells we did really well in, we exploited them, and the size of the pitch was just as much against Monaco as it was against us. You've both got to play on the same size of surface. The room that Kyle Walker was afforded and Ben Davies on the other side to get in was outrageous, and so it sort of, I was very cautious.
Raj, don't you think, I mean, that kind of, sorry to interrupt, but that kind of feeds into like a point I wanted to make. See, I Pochettino was bold, and you know, you could sort of term that as naivety as well, but then I would argue that actually all things, you know, going well, he was really let down by some fairly poor individual first half performances.
Yeah, I think the two goals came from mistakes.
They came from mistakes, but also like got that, I mean, like that kind of stuff happens. Teams break away, they score goals, it's football. But what my point would be that I know what people are going to say when I say this, but like, you know, there was a reason, for instance, Son was hooked at half time. I didn't think Eric Lamela played very well. I thought Kane was awful, actually.
I thought any one of the front four could have come off, in all honesty.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's
but
just
I, and I
the
just,
fact that Lamela, Eriksen and Kane are far more integrated into the squad.
Eriksen was pretty poor. And Ali, you know, I think Ali.
He was much better in the second half when he was put into a position because that he's more familiar.
That's it. He was given. They took away the defensive responsibility.
But it's not as if he was. It's not as if he was terrible in the first half either. It was just
he wasn't terrible. He was just a bit. He looked like a young. He looked like someone who'd never played in the Champions League before. He's the one that I'd sort of point the adrenaline finger at and say the occasion got to you a little bit. Not in a sort of you know, in a crushing way. It just became a little bit wild.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear the way in which the some of the players were talking about the occasion before the game. There was an interview that Rio Ferdinand did with Harry Kane on BT Sport, in which Kane, he asked him what he was looking forward to most, and Kane went, oh, the music and the ball. And I was like, these are things that, you know...
That's a fan thing.
Yeah, a child, you know, points out about the...
That's what me and Jack were looking forward to.
Yeah, and like, I mean...
everyone else we met was like, we're not missing the music, get in the stadium.
Yeah, it would be... it'd be absolutely pathetic of us to say that, you know, a 22-year-old playing his first Champions League game shouldn't be looking forward to those things, because
he worked his
ass off last season for that, and, you know, to have that experience. And I'm sure maybe that was just him being a bit more honest and a bit more open than maybe some footballers are. I'm so used to hearing the sort of the PR drilled response to that question, which would be
just another game. Just 110%.
That sort of thing.
Off. Yeah.
You know,
I think we both agree, Raj. Like, we'd much rather he said what he said.
It's actually sweet hindsight. To hear him say it.
Yeah, it is. It's endearing. But it's just like, you know, when we're picking through the bones, I mean, I don't know. All of this stuff
looks so much different if they win that game, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. And the thing about Pochettino, man, is that, yeah, you can say that he got it wrong. And I think in hindsight...
And it only took him till halftime to put it right as well. So it's not
We were a lot. I mean, look, also, let's give Monaco their dues. They defended very, very well in the second half. And, you know, a lot of people around us were sort of moaning about our inability to kind of penetrate those central areas. They defended those central areas extremely well.
They're in great form at the minute as well.
They are. Well, they just knocked off PSG a couple of weeks ago.
Compared to when we played them last time and done them by four, they're sort of mentally, at least, they're a completely different side to the one we faced before.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, definitely agree. But I think also, you lose games. And I'm wary of doing this kind of... I know neither of us are really doing it, but I don't think there's really sort of... It's just, you learn from it. We'll flog the players if they don't learn anything from it. But last night, you know what? It happened, and there were some good bits, there were some bad bits. Chalk it up as a little bit of experience and move on. I think we've said before in the pod that all three of us, that we're a team who... We rely on all 11 players playing to a certain level.
Yeah.
Because when one doesn't, we struggle. Mm. And I think last night we had, I don't think any of the front four can be particularly proud of what they did. And it was just an off night. I think sometimes, I think this is the internet's fault, and, you know, full of people like me actually who write about these things, and people like you, and it's just the way it's become.
Don't blame me.
Result has no. Oh, okay, well, people like me then, fine. But it's just like we overanalyze. Like, people who we were on a pod, we've got to fill an hour's worth of chat. You know, sometimes I don't think there's anything wrong with just saying we didn't play that well.
Yeah.
You know, and not get wrapped up at any sort of at a deeper level than that. So move on. And I one of the things that annoyed me about all that negativity around me was I care about the result. I'd much rather we'd have won, because it would have made a very good night into a brilliant one. But it was still an amazing occasion. I wouldn't, you know, outside of the actual football, I wouldn't change anything about it. Maybe leaving, but it was great. It was great fun. It is actually what being a fan is about. It's about sort of, you know, mingling with the people, you know, mingling with sort of fellow supporters before the game, and, you know, and okay, listening to the deafening Champions League anthem, and, you know, stuff like that. It's just great. And we'll get it. We've got another two games at Wembley. We've got another five games in the group. We'll be fine.
Yep. I think that's it. It's a disappointing start, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's good. That's a solid amount of football content I think we've ever done on this podcast.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Nice. Okay.
So what happens?
We've got big pro evolution soccer content in the second half.
Yeah, it's what happened when Jack's not here. We've got somebody talking to the Wise Men Say Sunderland fans now. I'm not sure which one of us will do it. But you're going to hear one of our voices, and then
we think
hear.
It's going to be Jack. We think
it'll be Jack. It may well be us. We'll find out. Gareth, welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for being with us again. I think you've probably been on as much as anyone else, which, you know, thank you. And also, why you keep saying yes to us? I'm not sure.
I don't know. No, but thanks very much. Yeah, I think it's because. You know, being in the Premier League for quite a long time, you know, it's probably quite incredible that, you know, we're still in the Premier League and secondary, that I'm on all the time, and we everything's always the same, and we've achieved nothing in the time we've been to the Premier League. So
I was about to say that we may well be able to sort of cut and paste every conversation we've had and just sort of replace the name of the managers that are in the job at the time. The only difference being this year is that you can't sort of sack someone a couple of days before the Newcastle game because they're no longer in the division. Is that sort of worrying you now that you can't have that derby back?
Funnily enough, I guess I don't really class it as a derby, but we had Middlesbrough's second game of the season, which was Moyes' second game, and we lost the first game, and then lost to Middlesbrough. So that pattern's somewhat been broken. But if you class Middlesbrough as a derby anyway, but yeah, it's just a funny one, really. It's like we thought we had it all figured out, and then it was almost like we went from being in the best position we've been in a long time to being in the worst we've been in a long time, which is quite hard to believe, I guess, is if you watch Sunderland as an outsider thinking that's the worst situation they've been in. They've been in loads. I mean, that's the case. I mean, after that Everton game, if somebody had, when we won 3-0 and stayed up, somebody had told me that night that I was set at midfield three against Middlesbrough in our next home game would have been Stephen Pienaar, Lyndon Gooch and Jack Rodwell, I think I probably would have sent you off to Cherry Knoll, which is the local mental hospital. So,
do you not like Gooch, Stephen? I've been quite impressed with him. Just, I mean, I don't sort of, no, I haven't obviously watched him live, but he looks like quite a underdeveloped player and still obviously got quite a lot to learn, but promising in a sort of non Jack Rodwell way.
The thing about it is, he's not really. He's a young player and he's got a lot to learn. He was on loan at Gateshead.
Yeah.
And then last season he had a short loan at Doncaster, but he got injured, but they got relegated. So it's a funny one, really. He's probably played about 10 first team games before he started this season. In the chores, I mean, he's really promising. I mean, he's got a lot going for him, but he's not somebody you should be playing week in, week out in the Premier League if you want.
No, I'll give you that, yeah.
And that's what it is. And the same can be said at Duncan Watmore. I mean, the front three, the three behind the four are Januzaj, Watmore and Gooch at the moment. And they're 65 years old between the three of them. Januzaj, you know, for all his talented, he's still learning. And when you've got, you know, if he was in there with like a couple of experienced players, you'd be thinking, fine, you know, he's going to be able to flourish a bit. But because the other players around him are so incomplete as well, it kind of eradicates his threat. So they need to really address that problem. And against Tottenham, I wouldn't be playing either Watmore or Gooch, to be honest.
Earlier on in the season, David Moyes had a press conference in which he was asked about how the season would go, and I think he quite, you know, frankly said that it'd be another tough season for Sunderland, and that, you know, because he was brought in with not a lot of time to prepare, he didn't bring in, you know, as many players or the, you know, have time to scout and sort of, you know, have a pre-season in the traditional fashion as a manager would, coming into a new club. He sort of was a bit more honest and frank about it than people wanted to be. I mean, personally, I'm not a huge fan of David Moyes. We spent a lot of time at Tottenham being linked with him while he was at Everton, and I was always very happy when we avoided him. But coming in to Sunderland now, and especially sort of answering in the way he did and being honest in that sort of regard, I personally didn't see too much wrong with it, because it would have been far more jarring had he sort of gone, yeah, we'll be fine, you know, everything's rosy here and, you know, I'll be able to fix everything overnight, because I think that would have given people unrealistic expectation. It might not be the finest PR in the world, but I think sometimes a small dose of honesty is better than sort of just a platitude that doesn't actually mean anything. that doesn't appear to have been how it was taken in Sunderland, though. Were people quite taken aback with sort of his lowering of expectations?
I don't think so, no. I don't think he really lowered any expectations because we don't really have any. I mean,
I don't mean to laugh.
No, it's true. I mean, we were in a situation where we're a team in the bottom eight all the time. So if you're in the bottom eight in the Premier League, you're probably not going to be safe. Even if you're one of the better teams in the bottom eight, you're still not going to be safe till like the end of April. So you're always going to be like in the mix relegation wise. So it's not news that we're going to be, you know, in a relegation battle. And you know, to me, it didn't particularly bother me because, you know, I think the writing's on the wall. You know, the way the summer went with losing Allardyce the way we did, not having any time, you know, to really do anything. I mean, I know we had the rest of the window. I think there's a lot gets made as well during the window about, you know, people saying that this fella's a panic buy that we signed in Dom. But like, really, you know, we bid for him about four times during the window and got him in. But it was a really tough window. They were trying to bring people in, but it's just difficult. I mean, people don't want to come to a team who are going to be fighting relegation like we are every time. And, you know, there's more glamorous places that can go and get probably more money than Sunderland. So I think we're pretty realistic up here about we're frustrated because I think there's a feeling like it really frustrates me when you hear comments like Phil Neville made the other night on Monday Night Football, which I didn't see, I just read it, where he said that we basically David Moyes, if he keeps Sunderland up, it'll be the best job he's ever, the greatest achievement of his career or something.
That is bollocks.
We're only four games into the season. People have got this idea that when people come to Sunderland, it's like they're doing us a favour by being here.
I saw you tweeting about this, actually. I agree with you completely. It's
they're getting paid a fortune to come to Sunderland and make us a better team. And nobody's managed to do that apart from Allardyce. There was signs there. I mean, we went unbeaten we lost one of our last 11 games last season. That was to Leicester.
Yeah.
Which is pretty decent. I mean, that's a quarter of a season. So, yeah, I mean, there were signs there. We had some good players. And, you know, I mean, it's like this weird kind of mentality. It's like that all we deserve is what we get. And we don't. I wouldn't even say we think we deserve more, but it'd be nice if people showed us a little bit of respect. And, you know, the pressure's immediately off Moyes with comments like that, because it's like saying, well, if you fail, it doesn't matter because it wasn't your fault. But if you achieve anything, then it's brilliant because you've done a fantastic job. I think that's just a wrong attitude to have.
Well, Stephen, it's funny because Gareth. I'm talking to Gareth, aren't I? I keep calling you Stephen, mate. I'm so sorry.
We're all on the same account. It's fine.
Oh, okay. The thing about Sunderland is that ultimately, like, forget your recent history, and I think everyone accepts that kind of there's been quite a lot of mismanagement, and you've back and forwarded through sort of philosophies and directors of football and managers, and you know, Adam Shaw has made quite a few short-term appointments, but ultimately you still play in front of 50,000 people every week, every other week. You still receive the revenue from the broadcasting contract. There's no sort of actual proper watertight reason why a manager can't come in and do more.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
More than just firefight, essentially, if I've understood you right. Because it's just a weird thing. It's just that, you know, the mentality, like when Phil Neville says something like that, the implication is that there is this mythical glass ceiling for Sunderland at about 16th place in the league, which is just a really funny way to think, because if you look at sort of the achievements of a, like, you know, a Bournemouth, for instance, I don't want to use the Hackney-Leicester example, but, like, you know, upwardly mobile teams, Swansea City are a very good example, I guess, Southampton, you know, it's just, I know that the area of the country where you're in is it makes recruitment harder for foreign players, and, you know, your last few seasons make it harder because players anticipate a relegation struggle. But in the right mentality, sort of, there's no, yeah. It's just a funny one. It's just being kind of accepted that you are this team now.
This is it's been a gradual thing. So, like, in football, you're very much like, you know, that then you're only as good as your last game or whatever. We're very much in the now. So people look at it and on the face of it, it's like, well, these teams are spending all this money and you're not. So why is that? Or, you know, how are Crystal Palace and how are Bournemouth avoiding breaches of financial fair play when Sunderland are playing within the boundaries? Well, the fact of the matter is, this has been a slow build-up to, you know, catastrophe, really, because when we came up under Keane in 2006, so we've been in the Premier League for 10 years, we spent lots of money. We spent lots of money under Steve Bruce. We bought players like Fraser Campbell. We bought for like £5 million, £6 million. Kieran Richardson was £6 million, and they both left for nothing. Craig Gordon was £9 million. He left for nothing. Craig Garner was £6 million. He left for nothing. Danny Graham was £5 million. He left for nothing. Stephen Fletcher was £12 million. He left for nothing. Adam Johnson, £11 million, went for nothing. So when you total it all up, we're not really getting any money back on our investments.
I hadn't realised that. I mean, I know of it now that you mention it, but that's quite a damning statistic, set of statistics.
Sucks. I mean, there's a never-ending list. I mean, you know, there's kind of players we've brought in and have, you know, and have failed, and we've not made any money back on their investments, and not just off the pitch when we sold them, or they've left on a free, which is indicative of how good they were for Sunderland, on the pitch in terms of performance and success, which breeds opportunities to bring better players in, to progress. And because it didn't work the first couple of times, obviously, we had a good window under Steve Bruce where we brought in Lee Cattermole and Darren Bent, people like that, and Lorik Sana. You know, that was a good window and we had a decent season. But then obviously we lost Darren Bent. We sold him for twice. We bought him, to be fair. There's a counter argument to what I've just said.
You had 24 million for Darren Bent, didn't you? Something absurd.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a problem that's been building for a long time. And our wage bill's ridiculous because what happens as well is we sign all these players, they're no good. And then we can't get rid of them. So, like people like Will Buckley in recent times, Liam Bridcut. So they come in, their combined transfer fees about £8 million, and then we can't sell them on. Nobody wants them, and we're paying them a Premier League wage, and then we've got to loan them out, and then we're having to subsidise their wages and replace them in the squad with better. So it becomes this problem where, you know, you've got a lot of average players in your squad who you can't even use, and they're on astronomical wages, which means there's a wage cap which you can't breach, so we can't bring better in. So when we got rid of Altidore, again, who was £6 million, which is probably the best bit of business we've ever done in swapping Altidore for Jermaine Defoe, you know, we had a problem there. We couldn't really do anything else but that because there was no wages free to bring anybody else in. So we're kind of – that's why every manager's coming in firefighting, because it's an inferno. It's like this constant, like a brush fire in Southwest Australia, just never ending, just sweeping across the region. So we've got a real problem in that sense, and the only way that is going to ever end is if we perform on the pitch. But you constantly you know?
I ask you this question every time. I think you come on and every time you say no, but it's always something that I always have in the back of my head for clubs such as yourself who are in this sort of a spiral where every time you have a start, it ends up being a false start and you can't really get any momentum going from sort of, as you say, the bottom end of the league because there are so many teams that have sort of fallen into a better position than you have financially that they're able to sort of keep on adding to their squad in the way that you can't, that you end up sort of just being sort of punched back down every time you try and climb up the ladder, to put it quite bluntly. And it's, you know, it's often no fault of the manager that's just come in, as you say, because he's inherited somebody else's problem and somebody else's mistakes before usually making their own. Would a season down like Newcastle are having now, where sort of you've seen what they've been able to do? I mean, they made us pay £30 million for Moussa Sissoko. They can sort of revitalise their squad, you know, use the parachute payments as best they can, get a bit of belief back by winning a few football matches. They won, was it 6-0 the other night away at QPR? I don't think they scored six goals in a month. Was it five? I think it might have been six,
really?
Actually, by the end of it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know they get a bit of belief back in the place, and that, you know, they're more than likely come back up, you know, automatic, and sort of the psychology of that is sort of almost like a hard reset. You know, the Championship isn't as bad as it used to be. I'm a season ticket holder down there, and you know, I support the club that are top of the Championship at the minute, so to speak. So I'm well aware of the sort of level and things that are down there. So. Is that not something that would interest you now, rather than sort of keep on going through this same repeated cycle in the Premier League?
Not really, no, because you can't predict what's going to happen if you get relegated. I think, to be fair, to Newcastle, they're probably...
Is it not something that can be stage managed, though?
I think we're so far down the line that getting relegated, the financial hit that would take. So you look at Newcastle. Although, for however, everyone obviously rightly dislikes Mike Ashley, you could argue that they're actually on paper quite a well-run football club. So when they've gone down, they've bought the league. Like, they've spent £100 million in the Championship, and they already had players like Mitrovic left over and Shelby left over, that and people like that who they bought in January, who were designed to keep them up. But they didn't. But they're still at the club, and you know they've got, you know, their squad is ridiculous, really, for that level. So they won 6-0 the other night. They should be winning every game till the end of the season and cantering that league easy, because of the resources that they've got. That wouldn't be the situation with Sunderland. We wouldn't have those resources. It just wouldn't happen. We're in the red financially, we couldn't throw that money at it because we all would have taken a financial hit by getting relegated. So it's almost like the way I look at it at the moment is, I know people have said, well, the TV money's come in, so why aren't Sunderland spending? Well, firstly, the playing field's still the same because the prices have gone up because everyone's got more money. So it's not really had that much of an effect. Secondly, you know, I'm sure we've all got overdrafts and loans and credit card bills to pay. The first thing, as soon as you, like, say you won, you know, 50 grand on a scratch card, the first thing you'd do is you'd clear your debts, wouldn't you?
Vegas.
So, yeah.
I guess, you know, this first chunk of money that we'll get from the TV, I imagine will go a long way to clearing a lot of the debt that we've got, to try and get us back on an even keel so we can go again if we stay up next season. So that's the way they've got to play it at the moment. So I think getting relegated, I know what you're saying, it sounds like a good idea because in theory, yeah, you might win a few games and you might build that confidence and it'd be a bit different, but you can't guarantee that. And also the effect that would have on the club and the community, because having a Premier League football club in Sunderland is massive, and a lot of people would lose their jobs.
Could also become another Oldham, like another well, original Premier League team, which just, you know, lead, well, without the kind of like the mad dysfunction, but you know, just sort of for every Newcastle who are capable of bouncing back up, there seem to be many other teams that you forget were ever in the Premier League.
I mean, our record level is very good. We haven't finished below third in that division since came up under Peter Reid in 1996. So in 20 years when we've been in that league, even when we haven't gone up, we've finished third or higher. So, I mean, we've got a good record, yeah, but I don't really want to be, I don't want to get relegated to get better. I want them to find a way to be better in the league that we are in. And at the moment, I don't think, for example, I can't see any sense in spending £8 million on Papi Gilibodji and selling Yunus Kabul for £3.5 million to one of your rivals. That's a completely illogical step.
Wasn't Kabul a personal, like, wasn't it a by the accounts, he had a newborn child on the way, and that's why he wanted to move to London? Or, I mean,
yeah,
I understand the frustration,
that's all very well, but you sell them for £3.5 million.
Well, you mean the fee? Yeah. I agree with you there.
He's probably in the prime of his career as a centre back at 30 years old. He had an excellent season for us last year, and we're selling them for £3.5 million to somebody who was supposed to be competing with. And then we buy Papi Gilibodji, who's 27 and doesn't know how to defend at 27 years old. And David Moyes is about schooling him. And, well, he shouldn't need to be schooled at 27. He should be on the way to being the finished article.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
When we spend £6 million on Paddy McNair and Donald Love, I mean, Donald Love is... Well, I mean, astonishing. It was speechless, really. I mean, you know, he had 9 games at Wigan last season. Mm. And you can see why he was playing in League One. Because I tell you what, he can't do anything. Like, he can't pass it. Can't run with it.
Transfer. Yeah.
Just terrible. I mean, you know, you've got it, your heart goes out there because he's chucked in the Premier League and he's trying to learn how to play football in the Premier League. But We've probably got academy products at 21 years old who would do as good a job as Donald Love. Paddy McNair looked really average. I don't think he's going to be the kind of person who's going to really make much of an impact. We spent £30 million on Didier Ndong, who I've never really seen. So I don't know what he'd be like, but Sunderland can't afford to spend £30 million on a prospect. They have to spend £30 million on a player who can play. So he has to play on Sunday, because if he doesn't, I'm questioning why we're spending £30 million on that player at this stage.
You mentioned Sunday. If we talk about the game that's coming up, it's at White Hart Lane. I got it wrong earlier when I was talking to you. Like, I thought it was at Stadium of Light. Usually we have an early game at Stadium of Light. I think that's why it is earlier on this season. It seems that's the way the fixture list usually seems to form. That's the excuse I'm going to use anyway. I was fairly confident. When I spoke to you about it, I essentially said that if Tottenham turn up and essentially have the right attitude, especially at home, there's no good reason why we shouldn't beat you. Have you got anything to say against that, or is it one of those that you've sort of almost written off and a point would be good for you?
I mean, a point would be amazing. I mean, if we get a point, I mean, I'd snap your hand off for a point now. I mean, that would be a brilliant result. I can't see it happening. You know, even if we, you know, it's just got one of those, like, you know, it's good but it's not right sort of feels about it. It'll be like, oh, we try a bit harder and we do okay, and then in the 75th minute or something, you know, there'll be a bit of quality and it'll be at 1-0 and that'll be the game over. You know, because that's the way things tend to happen, you know. It's like, if we're not getting hammered, it'll be a valiant effort which ends in defeat. But they're all defeats, so... Mm. You know, you still haven't got, you know, any you haven't made any ground. You haven't got yourself out of that rut. And we've got Palace at home after you, and then I think we've got Stoke, I think we've got West Brom to come. So they're always the games where you earmark, think, well, we've got a nice run of games. You know, we feel dismally in those. So, but you know, our season gets going in about 6 months, something like that. I'm trying to think. Probably a bit longer, about 7 months is usually when we kick in the gear. So, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to now. I'm looking ahead to March when the season begins. And hopefully we're not, like, drifting the bottom three. But, yeah, I can't see anything other than a very comfortable Tottenham win on Sunday. And I think if any Sunderland fan told you otherwise, I'd be lying.
Thanks very much for your time, Gareth. Thanks again for coming on. Hopefully when we speak later on in the season, you'll be a bit, you know, higher up the table. There'll be something to cheer about. Maybe Gooch has turned into a proper player. Paddy McNair's the next Paolo Maldini, you never know.
Well,
I know.
No, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, we've got January to come and V is, you know, the one that we've tried to get and couldn't get, and everyone's desperate for him to come back.
What's the status with Mvia, Gareth?
I don't know.
I don't. It's a really opaque situation. I don't really understand why. Because he's seemingly sort of caught in a kind of theoretical limbo between clubs now.
So apparently he was left out of Kazan's squad, but I think he's back in it now. Right. So I think he can play football now. So that's a good thing from Sunderland's perspective, because apparently, according to David Moyes, he signed a pre-contract for January.
Okay.
So he should be coming in January, but Kazan wanted €7 million for him, for us to sign him in the summer, which obviously is ridiculous because his contract expires and it's Christmas. So they're just basically just saying, well, we aren't bothered. We'll just let him crack on. And, you know, if you want to give us €7 million, fine. If not, then you miss out and then you'll have to wait till January. So that was the situation really. And, you know, you can't really blame Sunderland for not spending £7 million now. You know, which is
just like 4 months.
Just hope. Yeah, for 4 months.
Especially when you don't start playing until March.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll come in, but I mean, that's it. We've got loads of midfielders. I mean, that's the opposing argument. I mean, we've got Kershaw, who's back from injury. Catamore's injured. Hopefully, he'll be back soon.
I think Kershaw's a super player. I already do. I know he had a bit of a rough time to start with, but he was excellent in your unbeaten sequence. It's brilliant.
Well, he had the one bad game against
White Hart Lane. Yeah.
Who on earth is this bloke? And then he played against Man City. Yes, he missed the next game. And then he played against Man City in central midfield because he came in and played in the back three when at Tottenham, and he was absolutely brilliant. And since that game, but he's a touch of class on the ball. Like he's great. And we've got Ndong now, who will probably sit beside him, and he's got a bit of energy about him, apparently. Stephen Pienaar, who we picked up in the summer, I would have thought, why on earth are we bringing this player in? He's actually looked very good in centre midfield.
Yeah.
So he's just sitting in there. But like we've got the three we had on Monday, which was Rodwell. I'm trying to think who Yanezai played in the middle, the top of the midfield, and Kershaw. Rodwell's just laughable, really. I mean, there's not a player in the top two divisions who couldn't do what he did on Monday. I mean, he just does nothing. Passes it 3-4 yards either side, and that's it. Not good. We've just got to get some players fit. I mean, we've got 11 injuries. I mean, Barini's out till Christmas, which is a massive blow because he's really important for us. I mean, he's not the best player in the world, but he's horrible. And he does like naughty things and irritates people and falls over and holds his face and all the things you need. You know what I mean? So you do need players like that in your team.
It's the little prick role that he plays so well. Yeah. I know.
Every thing, he's had his leg broken and he's rolled around.
Yeah.
Like one of those sort of things. You know, but we haven't got, there's no nastiness, there's no, you know, I would have O'Shea back in at the weekend, even though he hasn't had a great time, you know, recently. I'd still have him in because of that organisation. And we'll desperately miss, like, a Catamore or someone like that. But, you know, leadership. We're only lacking leadership and quality and, you know, players and points. So, you know, what can possibly go wrong?
Head up, Gareth. Head up. All right. Okay. Well, thanks very much, man. Thank you. And well, sort of good luck for Sunday, but more importantly, good luck between now and March.
Cheers.
Cheers, man.
Welcome back to Roller Roost. Jack, Jack's earned himself a night off, so me and Seb valiantly jumped in and spoke to Gareth from Wise Men Say instead. As you could probably hear, Sunderland aren't very much looking forward to the game, so there's no real excuse for us not to to win that one. It's always nice, isn't it? Well, I say nice in a perverse sort of way, when we've sort of sat there for half an hour before and complaining about the chances we failed to score at a sold-out Wembley, playing Monaco in the Champions League, and then you speak to a Sunderland fan and just sort of, you know, I think the most positive he got during that conversation was that he said, if they avoid relegation next season, which he hadn't completely counted out yet as a possibility. So the fact that we sort of exist in two different universes but playing the same league maybe highlights the way in which money is has played its part, I think. It's not as if Sunderland didn't have any. I think they've just, as he detailed, have used it inexplicably badly.
I feel great sympathy for Sunderland fans, actually, because that is, I mean, the level of... I'm at a loss to try and explain some of the decisions Ellis Short has made. And actually, when Gareth talked about the amount of players who have been bought for sort of, you know, relatively large fees and have fucked off for nothing.
He did mention Adam Johnson as going for nothing. I sort of went, this...
Yeah, I was thinking that. I heard your silence and I just thought, Raj.
I'm not sure, Raj, you know, Her Majesty's paying for the honour.
Don't say it, you know.
But, you know, I didn't want to kick him while he was audibly down.
I don't think you can flog Sunderland fans with Adam Johnson.
No, they've got... Yeah, other things that aren't their fault to worry about as well. So.
There you go. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from that, if we speak to your own version of Sunderland, Seb, the Son situation, Son Gate as it's now called, I imagine, you know, your phone was alive and kicking after he scored two goals against Stoke. We sort of saved it for the second half because it's its own little, you know, side plot of the podcast now. It's one of those.
To be honest, mate, we could turn this into a separate podcast.
Yeah. The Son discussion.
Oh, man against Son. Yeah.
Yeah. I really want to send you two on to Jeremy Kyle together and just to see, you know, what'd happen, you know. You two, just an awkward silence as you sort
I don't
of.
I don't hate Heung-min Son. I really don't. I'm frustrated by him. And you know what? I'm glad we're recording tonight because the last 4 days have kind of illustrated why he frustrates me. He is such a talented footballer, and yet Saturday against Stoke, he wasn't quite as good as what was made out, but he played very well, and you know, he deserved his starting spot in last night. Awful, and rightly subbed at halftime.
But as a theme, I don't think he especially stood out, did he?
Well, that was the thing, man. He just my issue with Son is not his ability; it's his ability to. It's his tendency to express his ability forcefully. Now, like, the comparison I always draw is the difference in attitude between an Eric Lamella and a Heung-min Son. And Lamella has bad games, and Lamella has moments in games which are poor, but he never hides in games, and he never sort of checks out emotionally from them. And that might be to his detriment sometimes, but even if he's having a bad game, there'll always be a moment, even if it's fleeting, where... He played badly last night, but, you know, provided the cross for the goal, very nearly created an equaliser for Dele Alli. Son, once he missed that first chance, was nowhere. He was gone. And I mean, that might sound a little unfair, but, you know, sort of in the context of his Tottenham career as a whole, Jack will tell you, like, we were talking about a kickoff last night, saying, oh, you know, you want him to play shit. I was like, I'd love nothing more than him to score a hat-trick tonight. Worry about, like, when a Tottenham player is on the field, right behind him, always want us to do well, always want us to win. But around that, I don't see that anything I've said is really unfair. And I got a little bit of chat on Saturday for it. But then that in itself is kind of, it's sort of contradictory because it shows you what he is actually capable of doing. And when he's right, and when he, not saying when he wants to be a factor in games, but when he is a factor in games, look what he can do. And yet look what he's done in between that game, the Stoke game, and whenever his last good performance was. I can't even name it. And I don't think that's unfair. I think that when you're a £20 million player at a club like ours, I think you should be held to a much higher standard than he has been. I think it should require a lot more than a couple of goals away to Stoke for the, not the entire fan base, but for so many people to sort of say, oh, well, it's all okay now. I'm not having a go at people because everyone was rightly happy with the Stoke game. And yeah, 4-0 away is brilliant. But in the cold light of day, I don't see that anything's really changed. I want him to be, you can't demand that he's what he was at Stoke every week, admittedly. But then he needs to be more than that sort of every 4 months. He's a very, very good player. He's a seasoned international. He has got all the ability a player could ever want. He should be a regular difference maker. And when he signed for us, and I've always had this back in my mind, as if I've misremembered this, I'm really sorry. But I remember speaking to Archie Reintut, who covers the Bundesliga, excellent journalist, definitely should follow him on Twitter, and he said flimsy footballer mentally, like I got caught up in the sort of brilliant, I've seen the highlights, I've seen him play a little bit, he looks great signing for us, fantastic, and then since then everything I've seen has reminded me of that initial assessment, and I think we've got a lot of talented players in our squad, and I think that, you know, I think that some of the other players would benefit from the minutes that he's getting. Let me rephrase that, it's clumsy. I've had 4 hours sleep, I'm really sorry. But what I mean is, going forward, if Son's level continues to fluctuate in this way, I'd rather see his minutes go to Nkodu or Sissoko. I'm not even a Sissoko fan. I will be when he steps on the pitch for us, but I just, there's something wrong there. I would love it him to sort of slap me in the face figuratively with 6 months of brilliant form, and I'll cheerfully take all the Twitter abuse from it. Nothing would make me happier because it would be tied to Tottenham's success. But I just don't see it. I see a player that's very technically capable. He reminds me of old Tottenham, of that kind of, you know, flawed class that we used to have in small isolated pockets, a sort of, you know, I can do good things when I want to, but, you know, on a week-to-week basis. And remember, this is a team built on collective spirit and on all 11 players performing to a certain level. And as we said in the first half, when somebody drops below that level, we're fucked.
Okay.
And I see him as a weak link, mentally.
All right. I think, having heard what you said and you know, the Bundesliga correspondent having said something to it, I think there might be some level of confirmation bias in what you're saying.
I have no doubt, but that's the thing. We are Tottenham fans.
Yeah.
We can't avoid, like, looking at the negative stuff because it's habitual to us. But, mate, like, I want to be proved wrong. I want to see not Stoke every week, but Stoke once a month at least.
Yeah. You know? What I was going to say, though, is that I'm getting reasonably bored of having this Son conversation every week and having to dedicate 10 minutes to it.
You're bored of it.
Fuck. Well, I was going to say, if I'm bored of it, I'm sure you are. So what I was going to do is, I just had a quick look on the fixture list while you were, you know, ranting and raving, as you want to do when Son's mentioned. And we'll just put a line underneath it until... the 31st of January is when we play Sunderland again, so it's a nice little bit of symmetry. It's a few months. It gives, you know,
a reasonable
amount of time to pass, and then regardless of what's happened in between, we'll revisit this situation properly, because we usually have a bit of a break over Christmas and whatnot. We'll have far more of this season. It'll be half the season by then that's gone by. We'll a lot more to work with in terms of what he does, rather than sort of evaluating what he does game by game.
Yeah.
I can't promise that if he goes on to score a hat-trick between now and January, me and Jack won't take the piss out of you every week on week, but at the same time, just sort of, you know, rather than having to do this every week.
We can't do this every week because it's just like, it's become...
I do,
like,
hope people
the only thing
people
talk about now, like on Twitter. I just, every touch he takes now is a kind of...
We'll come back in January and we'll see what's
right, happening. move on. Let's just...
We haven't really had any questions this week, which, you know, I'm not too fussed about. I don't think there's anything we've particularly missed, so I don't think we've any need for questions. The one thing we needed to talk about between the two of us was Pro Evolution Soccer.
Yeah.
Because you two, you know, you admitted to me your dirty little secret last week, and you made me download the demo. And I actually spent one night, I had a free block of time, and I spent like 2-3 hours playing, like, you know.
What, just on the demo?
Just on the demo playing it, yeah, because you can actually get a decent 10-minute game out of it, and, you know, there's enough teams there to sort of get an all right feel for it, and the full game's not going to be too much different in the amount of time between the two being released. So I thought I'll have a proper go of it. And I went on a bit of a journey, to be honest with you, because the first most jarring thing was on the demo, I wasn't able to change the buttons around, so I was still crossing with circle, which just is an abomination.
Okay, that'd be difficult. Yeah,
that it just disgusts me to my core. But
this is the thing, you have the reverse problem, because I'm a Pro Evolution original, so when I play FIFA, I switch the buttons around.
Oh, really? That's disturbing. Mate, you're like somebody.
Shoot is square for me. It always has been.
Yeah, that's wrong, mate. Your brain's wired up wrong.
Yeah, even after all these years, because I haven't been really a PlayStation person for about 3 or 4 years. Mm. And even when I came back to it, it's habitual. Cross the square.
I was FIFA first. The legendary FIFA 98 was my first football game.
Okay.
So it was always circle for me. And then when I switched to Pro Evo every year, I'd switch the buttons around to the FIFA button. So even though I wasn't playing FIFA, everything was back at the FIFA button, just because they, you know, it made sense to me in my brain, and that's what I like.
Yeah.
So once I got over that, I didn't like it at first, because the game is really good. Like, the speed of it, I like the sort of the pitch feels larger than it does on FIFA, which I know it sounds weird, but it does. The players feel bigger on the screen and stuff like that, so I actually quite like the look of it. But there were a few things that just, like, I found a bit jarring to start with, like shooting from distance.
It's difficult.
It's not just difficult. They make the most absurd decisions I've ever seen. Like, the power bar bears in no relation to how hard you're ever going to hit the ball.
Yeah.
I swear, I tapped it once and, like, he skied it. And then another time I got it really wrong and smashed it really hard. And he did a P-roller across floor. So that was
Can I just interrupt to help you around that problem?
Mm-hmm.
Turn the power bar off. Because it's based on, like... The power bar, like you say, it's kind of meaningless, because, like, your shot is determined by your player's angle, all kinds of stuff. Just turn it off and feel the shot's pace.
The other thing was, it seemed like crossing was the best way of attacking. Like, the defenders are weirdly magnetic to the ball. So even if you play a really good pass somewhere... the defender always seems to have a step on you, and there's, like, as hard as I try to sort of switch to the player receiving the ball and step to it and get possession first, these defenders were suddenly on me before I had a chance of getting the ball, which was really strange. And
very non-FIFA, that.
Yeah, there's so many things that are just a polar opposite to how the approach is on FIFA, and a lot of my early issues with the game were simply the fact that I was playing a football game that wasn't FIFA, and it's been so many years since I've given that amount of time and consideration to a Pro Evolution Soccer game. But my biggest problem, and the thing that even after I'd been on my little journey still jars me, and I still think is... possibly the thing that makes FIFA still, for me, the better version of the two, if I had to put my neck on the line, because the one thing that I think I did come to was that they're two completely different experiences, and playing one and the other is you get two different things out of it, I think. I think on Pro Evo, it's more... You feel rewarded for sort of breaking a team down, and the best goal I scored was sort of... I managed to play like a crossfield ball, knock it down and send my fullback on an overlap around the defence and play a through ball through. And then I did a treble smash on my cross button straight across a 6-yard box, and there was a tap in at the far post.
Yeah.
And so that being able to play a triangle and that sort of almost a football simulation of Pro Evo was rewarding. But just the animations are the thing that jarred me the most. The goalkeepers look really strange when they're saving. Like, they'll do like a, even if it's like a soft shot, they'll do a massive dive for it. And it just, it felt a little less realistic than FIFA has become over the past few years. It almost like, you know, when at that time when FIFA was bad, the sort of the weird exaggerations it had back then is sort of the things that Pro Evo has now. You can almost tell that FIFA has had so much more money invested into it. It's obviously slicker and smoother one to play. Pro Evo does feel a bit like a throwback because it does. The players look a bit boxier. It feels a bit boxier. The controls are that much, that bit more sort of rudimentary. I feel, because even little things like, you know, on FIFA they've brought in that the hard ground pass, and you know, you can do the finesse shot and little shit like that that you're aware of, and like first touch buttons and just little things that become second nature on FIFA of just flicking the analog here and that, and the things that you can actually see making a little marginal difference in the game just aren't there on Pro Evolution. But it is a much more sort of raw and stripped down experience. But by the end of it, after I'd played for 2-3 hours, obviously far more comfortable with the controls and everything and enjoyed it a lot more.
I think what would help you is, I think your points of some of your points are valid. I went
into it actually really wanting to like it, because I quite enjoy having a knockabout with you and Jack on it, and the fact that you can't shoot from distance means that your main weapon against me on any football game has been taken away from you.
Well, I just get the game, because one of the key aspects of it, in my mind anyway, is, as it was in the beginning, it is the Master League facility. Like, it's a very immersive experience. It's very... My issue with FIFA, and the reason I don't think, to be honest, I'll buy the new one, because Jack phoned me the other day and told me that the demo was out and he played it, was disappointed, and told me to have a go and see what I thought. And I don't know how long the little demo games are in that, but I think it's sort of like 5 minutes. Within 5 minutes, I was bored of it. I just thought, I'm not enjoying this. It's just, it feels like, first of all, it feels lazy, because it is exactly like last year's, really. I'm not saying lazy in the sense that they haven't made an effort to produce a new game. I just mean that in terms of evolution, there's nothing, you know, it's the same football game. And also, this has always been my bugbear with FIFA. I say always, like for the last year, it feels like you're kicking a table tennis ball. Like, with what I like about Pro Evo is the weight of the football. And that sounds a bit Sherwood-like, I know. But you feel like your passes actually have a bit of, you know, a bit of force to it. And, you know, I like having to work to unlock a defence. And I don't like on FIFA, like you say there, like there are certain ways that you just can score on FIFA. Like, and you know your score. Like, when I was playing one of you two, I had the ball at like 25 yards from goal, it's kind of automatic. All right, ping that into the top corner. And it gets quite boring. And also, like, in terms of, I'm not really a big online guy. I don't dedicate hours and hours to football games. Sadly, I just don't have the time. But I like picking it up. And even in the space of like a quick 10-minute game, I like feeling immersed. And I never feel that with FIFA. Whereas this I got the game today, and I've had the day off, and it's fantastic. I really think you should get the game and go with the full, because like the demo.
Are you on commission?
No, mate. We're selling pod merchandise. No need for commission anymore. Right, retired. I think it's an absolute work of art. I really do. I think it's fantastic. Like even the things like the licensing, like it's pretty easy to get around that.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things of when
you might need to get used to it. Yeah,
I did enjoy it after a while. There are just some things just visually that I can't get past. The experience of playing it is you know, it's what it was when it was good. I mean, I still don't think it was as good as it was back then, just because I almost think the aesthetic of like the PS2 and that slightly shitter graphics almost made the game better, because I think the more powerful and the bigger and better the sort of the consoles,
well, the more it advantages the company with the money. I mean, it's just and sort of like EA, I mean, you know, the amount of money that must get spent on you know, you see it and it's very shiny and it you know, I read something about this. Someone said that the comparison between the two is kind of like if Pro Evo is a sort of is football at its kind of like what you said basically, it's kind of the raw ingredients of football: passing, shooting, controlling, defending, that stuff. Mm. Whereas FIFA is kind of like an idolized Hollywood version of the game, where you know everything is sort of pinging 30 yarders in off the bottom of the bar and you know, sound bites from commentators and the journey and you know the little the what's the guy called that, yeah, that thing that they've got, the career thing. Yeah.
I think that's really good, by the way.
I haven't done the
actual thing because they've just nicked it off NBA 2K, but the fact that it's a young black lad that's on it is
good. You can't change it
or anything like that. I think that's fantastic for gaming because I don't think they do very well in terms of representation across the mainstream. So I was very pleased to see that because I sort of assumed that you could just make it in your own likeness and sort of adapt it in that sort of a manner, but you can't. You have to be
Raj Bane's 9 foot centre forward.
I wouldn't put myself centre forward, although that's where I always tended to play when I played football, just because I was too lazy to do anything else.
I do think like
I might get it off Amazon or something.
I think you should, because not just for the sake of me and Jack, but like I think it's
there's
I find
just little
it rewarding.
Things like there's little touches, little bits of shine that I'd want it to have just to make it a touch better. Like I spent like a good 10 minutes just trying to work out how to improve sort of my first touch when I passed it to a player, and there doesn't seem to be a function to be able to do that. Or you know, when you're sort of doing a run down the wing on FIFA, you can knock your joystick forward and knock the ball on and sort of run into space. Yeah. And I can't do that. And there's just
you can. You just have to press the they're not very good at explaining the controls, but you just double tap the sprint button.
Oh, right. Or
triple tap it.
I had no idea. But
yeah, that's the thing. And this is the thing.
I think
you'll
almost have to relearn the game.
You have to commit to it. You're so accustomed to FIFA that you have to...
I tell you what it'll be like, Seb. It'll be like when you first play Rugby League Live. And the joy of finally...
That was a learning curve.
But the joy then of finally getting to grips with that game and actually getting to play it properly is rewarding. I think if I put it in my head as sort of the football alternative of Rugby League Live, I think I might get a bit more on board with it.
I think so, but I also, like, for the demo, like, it's just a one-shot experience, isn't it? It's just a game, like, with Barcelona. I think the real value is the Master League system, because it's it takes away all that kind of, like, oh, I'm going to win the Premier League with Tottenham, and then when I do it, it feels pointless. Whereas Master League, it's just like, I don't know. Like, I felt we've covered this, but it's a great thing, and like, so your player's growing, and it's a great thing to be able to pick up for, like, once you get used to it, to be able to pick up for like 20 minutes, half an hour at a time. And, you know, like, younger people, sure, you know, you've got hours and hours and stuff. But I'm so pleased, because it's the one thing I'm not very good at computer games generally, as you know. I do enjoy that. And I do, it's a nice distraction. And it's immersive enough to be a distraction, which is important to me. But I'd recommend everyone at least tries it.
Okay, I think that'll do us, mate.
We've done well.
One thing, just as a closing thing, there's been a lad who, like, for about 3 weeks now has been trying to get us to answer a question about the new Frank Ocean record. Have you listened to it at all? Are you aware of who Frank Ocean is?
No, I know who Frank Ocean is, but I haven't listened to his new record, no.
No, I think just 30 seconds, I think it's really good. I think it's maybe a little bit overlong, but there's 4 or 5 genius tracks in that, and it's always good to hear Andre 3000. So that's 10 second review. I'll tell you what to do, Seb. If you listen to that record over the course of the next week, I'll you know that time we got you to watch Bake Off, just to sort of expand your cultural horizons, which, by the way, if Jack was here, we'd have a 20 minute writing about that going to Channel 4. Because
but he's not, so you're not going to.
No, sadly, we'll have to save that for next week. But if you give that record a few listens this week, I'll ask you about it next week. And
all right, okay, I'll bang on the Spotify.
Yeah, I think it's back on Spotify. He did this weird thing where he put it on and then took it back off again. So we'll see. But yeah, that's
There's another. I've got another note for you, by the way. Jory, there is some consternation over your inability because you're now the chairman of our fantasy football league.
Oh yeah, I've got a tweet about this.
You've got to,
you're only bothered because you'd go top if I make changes.
No, mate, I'm already top with the changes.
I had a really good week after being awful. Lukaku scored a hat-trick and I'm right back in mix now. 80-point week, so I'd literally jumped about 100-odd places or something like that. And like back in all the leagues I was in, I've now sort of got a place back in and I made two
foothold.
Subs. Yeah, I had like Cesc Fabregas in my starting team and stuff like that, so I've taken him out. I'll tell you who's in my team now.
Whoa.
What's that?
Hang on, you have Fabregas.
He's not against the rules.
I think that was an amended... Well, we'll have to check with Jack on that.
It was Charlie Adam who was the amended one, trust
no,
me.
No, Charlie Adam was last year. We added someone, and I reckon... Well, controversy.
Somebody suggested Cesc Fabregas to me, but knowing
yeah,
that...
Yeah, but I think it was Jack, and that's when it comes from a member of the pod, that's more than a suggestion.
We'll see. Anyway, he's not in there anymore. And it's not like he got me any points from the fucking bench anyway. So.
Mate, yeah, this is a can of worms that you've opened here.
Anyway, I've got De Gea. I've got De Gea, Alderweireld, Nathaniel Klein, Coleman, Eriksen, Sigurdsson, De Bruyne, Lukaku, Kane, and then let me check who I've brought in because it's not updated yourself yet. Pick a team. I brought in Antonio at West Ham and Callum Wilson to finish
good week.
That off. So, you know, it's fair enough that. It's not too bad.
Yeah, mate.
Anyway, let's kill this. We've done well.
Yeah, good pod.
So only two of us. I prefer it when there's three.
Yeah, feels a bit. We need, yeah.
The awkward bit is doing the ending that neither of us know how to do.
Well, we're just. I think it's good, though. It's like a special skill that Jack has. What does he say? It's basically just, if you like the pod, listen to it, I guess, is the pricey. But you can follow us on Twitter at RTRpod. Oh, that's the website, isn't it?
No, it's RTR_pod on Twitter. And that's RTRpod. And that's RTRpod.com.
For the website, yeah. And we will update you in about 6 days on the Fabregas issue.
And the
we're gonna have to we've kicked people out and like I know how much you hate things like sort of preferential treatment and you know I know you hate that so we have to Jack and I will go away we'll have a think we'll send you a written judgment and you will have
that's
a couple
only because
days
you
appeal.
Can't use email
no I'm a traditionalist I can use email when I have to but.
Yeah. You've got letterhead paper in your own name.
Gold leaf. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's say goodbye.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.